the 915 to H-Town, from the Panhandle Plains to the Valley, and everywhere in between. This is the 5050 Podcast, powered by College Promoters USA. Join me, Hector Cano, as we cover the Texas high school club and college soccer landscape, along with an inside look at the college soccer recruiting scene. The 5050 Podcast is a platform about the people and for the people who are dedicated to the beautiful game.
College Promoters USA, founded and located in San Antonio, operates as the only family-owned college recruiting company in Texas that brings a truly professional, local, and face-to-face approach to area high school student-athletes and their families. If your son or daughter is serious about college athletics, call them at 210-494-6363 or visit collegepromotersusa.com anytime. College Promoters USA, the best investment a parent can make in their high school student athletes.
Here we go. It's a very special edition of the 5050 Podcast, powered by College Promoters USA. Our proud partners, College Promoters USA, they are America's premier college prep program and high school student athlete marketing service since 1997. Located here in San Antonio, Texas. For those of you in the local area, you can find them in the Ventura Plaza Shopping Center. You can also find them on social media at Twitter, at SATX Recruiting, as well as on Instagram, at College Promoters USA. And you can also find more information on them at their website, collegepromotersusa.com. My next guest, he is the proud head women's soccer coach of the Oklahoma Sooners. He is Coach Mark Carr. Coach, how are you, sir?
Good evening, Hector. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Excited, stoked. Great to have you here. I know personally, I had already told you I'm personally a big UT guy, UT fan. So this is taking, you know, all of my might, not to say something, but despite that, extremely proud and happy to have you here, Coach.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So Coach, before we dive in, and we kind of get into the Q&A part and start telling us a little bit more about the special things you have going on there in Norman. Tell us briefly just a little bit of your background, where you've been, and how you arrived at OU.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a dream story, I think. Naturally, I'm England. I'm from England. I was born in England. Spent probably 20 years of my life there, 21 years of my life there. You know, as a youngster, I was around many professional clubs, talking 13, 14, 15 years old with Queen's Park Rangers, Charlton, some of the smaller clubs in London. Was never an amazing player, but always kind of had a passion for the game, loved the game, studied the game, you know, just had lots of good mentors around me, coaches, and really kind of just really had a passion for coaching, you know. So even at a young age, I was, you know, 15, 16 years old, I was around some of the top coaches of our academy teams at Charlton, in the schools, working in the community, that type of stuff. And I think I think it was 2001, I came to the US to do some camps. A friend was like, hey, do you fancy going to California? And went out to California and ended up becoming a technical director of a club there. And I think shortly after that, 2 weeks after that, I went on a coaching license. So back then, I think it was the USSFC license. And so I get on the license, and my assessor, I didn't know who she was Jill Ellis back in the day. So this was back in 2000. She was the head coach at UCLA. And at the end of the week, she handed me a business card. She said, hey, listen, we've got an opening for a second assistant at UCLA in Los Angeles. Pay $7,000. Would you be interested? And, you know, it's coaching women as well. So, you know, I didn't really know what to think. I think at that point, you know, growing up in England, women's football wasn't as mainstream as it is nowadays. So, you know, I had a sister who played the game, and she always played with the boys, but not nearly to the level of kind of the media interest and the level of professionalism that you get now. So kind of arrived at UCLA, you know, just a beautiful place. Anyone who's been down to Westwood, just an amazing place. And you know, decided to take Jill up on her offer, and really just incredible. I mean, she's the person that gave me kind of my start in the game and taught me a lot, you know, taught me the most about the women's game and how to develop. And obviously UCLA, I think right from the get-go, you know, it's high performance, championships, competing to win, being the best in your sport, that standard of excellence. So I spent 4 years there, moved on as a head coach to San Francisco, made a lot of mistakes back then, you know, thought it was just an easy copy paste. You know, you go from a big program to a smaller program with different challenges. So, you know, had a little bit of success, but really struggled. And then from there, we got to move back to Texas. My wife originally is from Houston. So we brought our family back to Texas. We woke up one day living in California and just was like, what are we doing living in California? It's so expensive, you know? So, you know, moving back to my wife's home was awesome, and spent some time in the club system, which was awesome. Really a great, you know, great opportunity to develop players and work with players and work four nights during the week to hone my craft. And, you know, from there, I was doing a lot of training center stuff. I think it's called the National Training Center stuff, which I think are regionalized now from our talent ID department at US Soccer. So I did a lot of those. Texas was one of the regions that I was responsible for. So I did that, was an assistant with some of the youth camps, U14, the US U14, U15 camps, working under some great coaches there. And then from there, a couple of opportunities opened up with the Federation. As a development coach, so we would, I think back then I was a development coach, so I was given a couple more regions. I think they sent me out to the Northeast, nice and cold out there, and Texas, and that was still my region. So I think at the time we actually did a couple of training centers in Oklahoma. And then at the same time, I coached the U15. So it was really a great position of development, of, you know, building curriculums, you know, working with coaches, working with top young players who, you know, you would show up at trainings and just bright eyes and hungry to be the next Alex Morgan, hungry to be the next Carly Lloyd. So it was really, really a great time. And, you know, worked alongside the coaches as well, worked alongside a lot of the club coaches in the Dallas area. And, you know, so once the 17 job come open, I was with the 15s and they were graduating. So I'd had them for 2 years and graduated to the 17s. So spent 2 years with them, won a CONCACAF championship, went to the World Cup in Uruguay in 2018. After that, you know, just kind of a lot of transition was happening with US soccer, with moves and that type of stuff. And, you know, progressed with the 20s. And I think it was December, you know, or October, November, December 2019, I got a call from OU to see if I'd be interested in, and my wife went to UT. So when I told her that, she was,
you know, no.
Yeah, she was like, how's this going to work, you know? But,
you know, house divided, huh?
Yeah, I think at that point in my life, you know, it'd been a privilege to work for US Soccer, just working with some of the best developers and coaches, you know, inside the Federation, specialists in their department. And I think I was ready for a new challenge, you know. So when I arrived at Oklahoma, it just had everything that I wanted. I mean, it's a world-class institution, and you look around, you see the sports, you see football, you see gymnastics, you see softball, basketball. I mean, it's everything that I want. And, you know, it's been here 2 years now, so we're improving, we're making progress. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for me, when you're with the national team, it's one camp every other month. So there was that a little bit of that void of the daily work and, you know, getting on the grass on a daily basis and working with players and really helping them. So that was a part of it. And then I think the other piece was just having a young family. Like I have a young family and, you know, working for the Federation. 1 week I was in Japan and next week I was in San Diego. Then it was off to La Manga, Spain. So I just was missing that kind of time with my kids and seeing them grow up. So all in all, just really excited to be at OU and yeah, just excited. And it's a special place.
It's great stuff. Great stuff. So tell us, we look at, you know, we go back there, that brief, excuse me, brief snapshot you gave us there, Coach. Go from a new assistant, UCLA, under Jill Ellis, right? And then, you know, San Francisco on your own, running your first program. Then you find yourself kind of ascending, making that progression from the 15s to the 17s to the 20s with the U.S. youth national team on the girls side, to now OU. Talk to us. Did you ever, I guess, first of all, at what point did you kind of find yourself kind of assessing how your career path, like, wow, like, did you, when you looked back on it, what was your thoughts on it? But also now, you know, you talk to us briefly about just a little bit more your time there with the Federation, with, you know, U.S. soccer, and then choosing OU. Why did you feel that, hey, maybe it was the right time, aside from what you had just briefly mentioned, but why the right time really to go? Not the time, but why OU? Because you could have gone to a lot of programs, right? But why OU?
Yeah, that's a lot of people ask me that question. They say to me, like, you had the best job with the Federation, working with the best players. And I think there's a number of factors in there that I've already alluded to. But, you know, OU is a special place. And I think the expectation of excellence, the expectation of championships, the expectation of being the best in your support, you know. And then when I walked through the door there, just seeing all the specialists, all the people in the different departments, the administration, and then the resources, just off the charts, you know. I didn't know enough, like, going into it, but now 2 years in, I think one, it aligns real clearly with kind of the things that are important to me in terms of development, high performance, competing to win, having that platform, you know. And then I just think it is the complete package of all the pieces where, you know, if you have a daughter that wants to compete and play at the high level, at the highest level, it has everything. So I think obviously US soccer is like the premier federation in the world for women's football on the international side. There's a lot of, you know, on a different level, like I saw that gap with OU, what they could become, you know. And I think we're already on that journey. So I would say, in summary, just, you know, kind of my core beliefs in terms of high performance, development, competing, championships, excellence, being the best in your sport, and then just the resources and just a world-class institution.
Yeah. Good. Okay. So we start to transition now. Look at your time there at OU. And in particular, anytime I speak with a college coach, I speak with quite a bit of them, I've been asking them this question as of late. Give us kind of a look back. What were kind of your thoughts when you look back, your assessment of this past, of the really the longest year in college soccer history, going back to the spring and then turning right back around in the fall, this past fall season, from your perspective, give us what's your take on that when you look back on it, your assessment?
Are you talking about, Hector, are you talking about the COVID year, like that, when it first all got shut down?
Correct. Just the fallout, right? How what basically ended up transferring last year's fall season into this spring of this calendar year, right? And then turning right back around a very short off season, very short summer, and then right back at it this fall for the traditional soccer season.
Yeah, so I think it was challenging. I mean, I think not only challenging for me and my staff, you know, we were hired in January 2020 and, you know, shut down in March 2020. So literally there 3 months, and challenging for me as a coach and as a staff. But I would also say challenging for the student athlete. Here comes a new coach with new standards, new expectations. And then all of a sudden, you know, you have a taster of it, and then it's shut down and everything goes to Zoom. And, you know, there's no difference for everyone across the country, but I think being a new coach and, you know, trying to get a program, you know, off the ground and moving in a different direction, you need that kind of connection, that time in the meeting room, that the unit meetings, the individual meetings, you know, time connecting as a team, you know, just in person. You know, I think Zoom's great, and I think it's I think it's really developed my skills, and it was a skill we already had when we worked for the Federation, but it was definitely challenging, you know. So, you know, we did a lot of stuff on Zoom, and we tried to teach through Zoom and connect through Zoom and do different activities through Zoom, whether it's it was more on the academic side, more on the personal development side, you know, navigating social injustice in the middle of all this as well. I mean, definitely, you know, a new coach trying to learn about what's important to his players. I mean, so challenging, you know. And then I think our kids arrived back, I think it was the last day in July. And I think there are all types of different medical protocols that were in place. So you've got kids that were coming from California, kids that were coming from Dallas, who could use a gym, who could not use a gym, who were inside. So it was definitely challenging early on. And I think for me now, looking back, you know, the fall was a lot of kind of evaluation and learning of, you know, yes, evaluation about the student athletes, but kind of evaluating the conference, the Big 12 conference. I mean, tremendous conference in there, super competitive, some great coaches. So we went through that conference season and learned a lot about ourselves. And like I said, all the COVID protocols with testing three times a week, not, you know, a little bit of the uncertainty of not knowing who would be available for games, available for training, who was quarantined or isolated. It was right. you just had to be ready to pivot and move and adapt and adjust quickly. So definitely challenging. And then you come out of that, and you know, we go through the holidays, and you know, we're back in the spring 2021, and obviously at that point the NCAA had moved the NCAA championship to, I think it was May or April, at the end of April. So a lot of schools that hadn't played in the fall now were competing in the spring for their real kind of traditional season. So so for us, it was, you know, the decision for us was how do we maximize development with training, but also play a competitive schedule as well. So it ended up, when I look back, it, you know, all the schools that were playing their traditional seasons, they were in their conference, so they were having conference games. So what that left for us was, we're going to have another round of Big 12 games, you know. So right. We went round two of, you know, round robin against a lot of the Big 12 teams. So put a good look at the Big 12 teams, and, you know, came out of that and had a real good understanding of the conference, the demands of the game against different opponents. But also it gave us an understanding of where we were, and where we needed to go. So so kind of ended that, and then that was the point where, you know, we started planning for the fall. And so we've just finished up fall 2021. You know, from my end, it's not where we want to be. I think we've got big goals and big dreams, but made massive progress, I think, as a program, from the year before. You know, and performances on the field, just kind of winning four out of the last five games in the Big 12. You know, credit to our student athletes, credit to our kids for doing that. You know, so making the Big 12 tournament and playing Texas again, but all positive experiences. And now, you know, kind of looking forward, it's set a really good foundation for us to kind of go to the next level and take the next steps.
Yeah. So that must have been a tough situation for your significant other, for your spouse, on that you're in the tournament playing at UT. So she may be wearing some Oklahoma stuff on the outside, but UT stuff underneath, supporting her husband. How does that work?
Yeah, funny story. So when I first came to OU, you know, I was living up here for the first couple of months, and she had on her Tahoe, she had, you know, one of those little you get those little horns on the back of her. And I was like, honey, this is not going to work. Like, you're going to, like, coming from England, if you're driving the Tahoe and you're a Liverpool fan and you're playing against Everton or Man United, playing against Man City, your car's going to get keyed and those horns are going to get ripped off. So bless her heart, she pulled it off. And she's been awesome. She's been awesome, and she's supportive and supports me. And, you know, the kids are all in crimson and cream, and
I don't
see any burnt orange anywhere, so that's kind of good.
All right, that's good. So we talked a little bit, right, obviously the COVID piece and then just a COVID year, super seniors, all this stuff. But kind of on the other end, the other thing that was affected by that also, because obviously there was a big ripple effect. Any thoughts? What are your thoughts right now on kind of just what you're seeing just in general in terms of the transfer portal situation? And why I ask that is also, you know, I was referencing a listening to just the other day on a particular podcast, very good podcast, very credible podcast, but it covers college football. And it was talking about this was as of Tuesday, there were over 3,000 college Division I college football players in the transfer portal. Obviously, that's just one sport, but just in terms of what everything that is being seen right now that you're seeing or experiencing, what are your thoughts right now in terms of the transfer portal?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think, you know, for me, I look at it two ways. I think it's been good for us. I mean, given where we are as a program, you know, just trying to make that next step and allowing us to go into the portal and address some immediate kind of gaps in our program in terms of, you know, whether it's a certain profile of player, whether it's a certain position. So from that standpoint, it's been really great, you know. And I think, you know, I think as well, like, you know, I look at it like this, at the end of the day, like these kids that are coming out of high school, they're coming out of club and their dream is to, you know, play 4 years in college. And we all know, like, minus the top 1% or 2%, maybe less than that, that you're not going to make $1 million playing soccer. And, you know, at some point it's going to be about getting a job. So I understand that, you know, if kids are unhappy and they're not getting the playing time that they want, or they don't like, you know, the university, or they don't like, you know, the style of play, like I understand that. So at the end of the day, I think, you know, it serves two things. Is it challenging when, you know, kids that maybe some of your top kids jump in the portal and go somewhere else? Yes, like I understand that part of it. But I also respect the happiness part. You know, I think it's about kids being happy. And a lot of these kids are going to play 4 years in college. And you know, some of them may go to the NWSL. Some of them may go abroad and play for a couple of years and extend their careers. But for the vast majority, it's they want those playing time, and a positive experience. So, you know, going into the portal, I mean, there's so many great programs. The parity is so tight. There's so many good players that, you know, I understand both sides of it, you know?
Yeah. 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 Good points. So going forward, Coach, particularly this year, your 2022s and beyond, tell us a little bit. I know we wanted to highlight a little bit your upcoming Senior Elite ID Camp. Tell us a little bit about that. What's that about? What does that look like, and when is that?
Yeah, so we've got two Senior Elite ID Camps that are coming up, Jan 16th and Jan 30th. You can sign up online, markcarsoccercamps.com. And, you know, I think I'll speak for other college coaches as well, but I think these college camps are awesome. I think they're a great way to get potential student athletes on campus, getting them on your facilities, getting them in front of you. For us specifically, it's about going through the exercises and drills that they would do as an OU college soccer player. But I also think that there's value in for the student athlete, most importantly, that they get to be coached by the college coach, you know, so they get to see, you know, are they demanding? Are they laid back? Are they, you know, do they coach in the flow of the game? Do they coach, you know, in breaks? You know, are they, you know, what are they looking for in terms of principles? Is it defending? Is it attacking? You know, so I think they're so valuable, these college ID camps, and you get a real kind of snapshot for a day of the college, the university, the facilities, the coaches, which I think is probably the most important piece, right. And everything that goes on. So yeah, January 16th, January 30th, you can sign up online.
And are those full day 8 to 4, 8 to 5 setups, or what do those look like?
Yeah, so typically what we do is we do 3 hours in the morning, potential student athletes and their families then get a break. They can go away, obviously look around the campus, you know, but typically 3 hours in the morning, 3 hours in the evening, we focus a little bit more on kind of the individual and kind of unit in the morning. And then the afternoon or the evening session is more kind of AVA 11v11. I think what I would say to you for our camps is we want the kids on the field playing in front of the coaches as much as possible, you know, so maximum ball rolling time, maximum competing, playing, shots going in. So we can see them play and get after it. So we're very mindful of that. We don't stand around and talk for too long, but it's high intensity, high octane right off the bat.
Incoming recruiting class, where are you at with that right now? And can you highlight any? I know you got some kids from Texas coming in. So tell us a little bit about those.
Yeah, and no, I'm really excited. Really excited about our 22 class. I think one... top draw soccer, I think, has us ranked around 11 or 12, nationally ranked, which I think is the highest in history for our U soccer. So we're really excited about that. And obviously we're, you know, we dove straight into Texas. I mean, Texas is an absolute hotbed for women's soccer. You know, whether that's Dallas, Austin, Houston, you know, and I'm sure there's areas in there that we're missing as well, you know. So really excited about the kids we've got coming in from Texas. You want me to go through some of the student athletes that we have?
Yeah, so, absolutely. Anything you can share with us, anyone you want to highlight?
Yeah, so we have a goalkeeper coming in the fall, Olivia Ramey. She's a stud goalkeeper for the FC Dallas program down there. Real great shot stopper, real great, intense, hard worker. Think she's going to be really great for our program. Comes from a great family. We have a girl called Cassie Clifton who's arriving here in January. You know, left back, flying left back, attacking left back. Likes to get forward, likes to play in the attack. Sweet left foot, you know, always helps on that left side. Great left foot. Then we have a girl called Marianne Baltamis. She's from... Defeaters, you know, and she's just a competitor, a winner, get stuck in, impeccable timing in the tackle, great in the air, combative in the game. So really, really good player. And then another one out of the Dallas area is Haley Hartman. She is a cousin of one of our, I think if I say this right, our running backs, Marvin Mims. So super quick, pacey, center back. You know, nothing gets behind her. You know, very composed on the ball, good building out of the back, good understanding of breaking lines with her passing. I have a girl from Defeaters, Michelle Pack, like an attacking midfielder, very creative, does things with the ball that not everybody sees. Very creative, very deceptive. Very good in combination, good off the dribble, can run beyond the number nine, score goals, get into the box, create assists. So we're very excited about her. She'll add some depth to the midfield. And then finally, another young lady out of Dallas, Hadley Morrell, comes from a really sporting family. I think her brother plays baseball at Texas Tech. Just driven, hungry, goal scorer, super athletic, and just... somebody who's driven, you know. So really excited about our 22 class for sure. And there's some other young women in there that are, you know, from Oklahoma, from Florida. So it's a really solid class.
Talk to us, you know, for our parents and PSAs, you know, potential student athletes, recruits that might be listening here, whether it's tonight or in the next couple of days, next couple of weeks. Give us the attending a college showcase right from the coach's perspective. Run us through kind of briefly, just really quick, what that looks like from the coach's perspective, from your perspective, just morning start to end for a particular day, and maybe some of the things that you look for.
Yeah, well, we're heading to one this weekend, so we're leaving tomorrow. So it's long days. I mean, it's early mornings and late nights, and you know, I think typically we'll show up to a field with our chair and our coffee or Starbucks, and just start watching a game. You know, I think it varies from college to college. Like, you know, is their goal more, do they have certain positions they need? Are they going out with a blank canvas? Is it more they're looking at certain clubs from that region? So I think that there's lots of, you know, lots of variables in there when you're trying to make decisions. But typically for me, I'll go try and watch a half. And, you know, for our program, I have myself and two other assistants. So normally we're all out and we just separate, you know, we divide and conquer, and we spend typically maximum a half at a field before we move on to the next game, you know. So, you know, just for all the listeners out there, it's about making immediate impact. You know, it's really important that, you know, as college coaches, we're moving from A to B to C to D. We've got a lot of games to cover. So it's important that you make immediate impact, that you're effective. And that however you do that, whether that's your specific talent, you know, whether that's what you're good at, whether that's something that your coach wants you to do positionally. So, yeah, we look for those things. You know, and obviously for us, as we arrive, like, we've got the profile of what we're looking for in our head, and we're trying to match what we see with that profile and kind of evaluate that fit for what we need with OU.
So how often does it happen to you where you go, you're going to a set field to look at maybe set player or set number of players, and someone else completely catches your eye?
All the time.
You're like, who is that?
We actually, this actually happened to me in San Diego. I was watching one of our incoming mid-year enrollees for 2022, who's going to be with us in January. And she's an attacking player, forward, signed for us. And very talented. And she was starting to outrun center backs, get shots off, outrun the right back, get shots off. And then I think her coach moved her to the left side. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to hang on maybe 5 or 10 minutes here and see how she does. And all of a sudden, the girl that she was up against for the next 5 minutes did not get by her 1 second. And so, you know, I kind of made note, had some conversations with the club coaches, and then, you know, kind of followed up. And now this kid and her sister are going to be coming to OU this fall. But that's exactly what you're saying, you know?
Right. So you got 2023s, 2024s, and even 2025s out there, coach. They may know about Oklahoma. They may not know that much about the school, right, the program. But why should they maybe consider – what is it that they don't know yet regarding Oklahoma women's soccer? Why should they consider OU?
Yeah, well, I think it starts with the university. I mean, I think a lot of the things that I said that drew me to OU would be those same reasons. And I think it starts with the university. It's a world-renowned brand, a world-class institution. And I think you can get the balance of academics, personal development, and soccer all in the one package, you know? You know, I think from the athletic side, it's a top level Power Five school. Like, it's a top level Power Five school with the best facilities, the best resources. I mean, I think now with name, image, and likeness taking the forefront for student athletes, I know it's been happening with football and kind of the more mainstream sports, but we're going to see it kind of coming down into kind of the Olympic sports, I think. That's important. I think resources and what a place like OU puts into their student athletes, not only like with facilities and nutrition and all the other stuff, but in terms of resources in the classroom, support in the classroom. And then the other piece I would say for us is we're a program with big goals, big ambitions. I said it to you in the past, like, you, when you come to OU, and this was one of the pieces that drew me there, was just the expectation of championships, the expectation of excellence, the expectation of development, moving from point A to B to C to D. Like, you have to develop yourself at a place like OU. Like, it's expected and it's contagious. And when you're, you know, when you're working out and you look to your left and your right and you see, you know, see gymnastics or, you know, football doing their conditioning work and just that expectation, it's pretty inspiring at the end of the day, you know? So, it has everything. And I think for me, you know, our coaches as well and our support staff, I think, you know, just given my background with the Federation, you know, my connections, my assistant, David Goff, who, you know, worked with the England women's national team, won a bronze medal in 2015 at the World Cup. I mean, just really forward thinking coach, great ideas. Maurice, our assistant, she's, you know, been through the Canadian youth national team system as a goalkeeper, you know, played Division One at Memphis, was at IMG. So high performance, understanding of development going from point A to point B. And, you know, it's somewhere where we're on the rise. We're hungry. Like, yes, we made progress, but, you know, we've got more work to do. And if you feel that you want to be part of that and this is something that interests you, then, you know, I'll use the place.
So earlier you mentioned the Big 12, playing in the Big 12, and then obviously Power 5. So I got to ask you, thoughts on whenever it may be, thoughts on playing in the SEC?
Yeah, I mean, I have not had any conversations with anybody about when it's going to be. We've been told 2025, so that's the date that we're targeting. But listen, I think, you know, the Big 12 is an incredible conference. I mean, I've been part of it for now 2 years, and it's a really great competitive conference with great teams, with great coaches from top to bottom. And there's a lot of parity in there. You know, there's a lot of good players in there, a lot of good coaches in there, a lot of good schools in there. And I think the SEC is the same. So yeah, I mean, for right now, like we're focused on the Big 12, but whenever that time comes, whenever that is, we'll be excited to be in the SEC as well. So
what were those initial thoughts, even though you didn't know when it might be or what was reported as 2025, but initial thought when you first heard that, what went through your mind?
I don't think I had any thoughts really, to be honest. I know it's, you know, it's probably for people way above my pay grade, you know? So, for me, like I said to you, the SEC and the Big 12 are both incredible conferences. You know, I think if you pitch some of the Big 12 schools against the SEC schools, I think there would be some really entertaining games.
Yeah. So as we start to transition here, Coach, before our next segment, kind of some final thoughts here in terms of what has you excited about your program's future, maybe immediate future, and then that maybe that long term, that vision. But also, so what has you excited about your program's future, and what can we expect from Oklahoma women's soccer in 2022?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good question. I think, you know, I think seeing the progress that our student athletes have made in a real difficult year, 2020 to 2021, has been pretty incredible for me, just to see how they've navigated that and dealt with adversity and dealt with everything. And then obviously coming out of you know, this fall season with a much improved record, I think we want to build off that. I think we want to really, you know, I think we finished 8-11-1. You know, I think we've finished in the middle of the pack of the Big 12, you know, and I think for us and for a place like OU, that's not enough. So I know there's a lot of fire in our student athletes. There's a lot of hunger in our student athletes. I know we're excited for the winter and spring season. We got a lot of work to do. We got to get down to work, and we've got to improve, and we've got to get better, and we've got to add some layers to our game. But yeah, I mean, I think my goal now is to really push on and make sure that, you know, come the fall, that we're ready to compete at the highest level in the Big 12, and, you know, like all programs, compete for championships and compete for NCAA tournament berths, and that's what we're going to be focused on, and that's what everything's going to be geared to.
Good stuff, Coach. Awesome. Well, understand you're going to stay with us for our next segment, so don't go anywhere. For our listeners, we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
College Promoters USA, founded and located in San Antonio, operates as the only family-owned college recruiting company in Texas that brings a truly professional, local, and face-to-face approach to area high school student-athletes and their families. If your son or daughter is serious about college athletics, call them at 210-494-6363 or visit collegepromotersusa.com anytime. College Promoters USA, the best investment a parent can make in their high school student athlete.
And we're back with Coach Mark Carr, head women's soccer coach of the Oklahoma Sooners. All right, Coach, again, are you ready to get stuck in? We're going to jump right in, counterattack, and have some fun with you.
Yep, sounds good.
All right. Now, as a coach, these questions are for you as a coach, not as a player. All right, so any training session or game day superstitions or rituals?
Game day superstitions or rituals. I have to do a Peloton workout somewhere. I have to work out before the game somewhere in there.
Now, is that a set time, set workout, exact, or are you pretty fluid with that, pretty liberal with that, or what?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I kind of rush home and the wife will kind of, I've got my own idea of doing the Peloton, but I'm getting pulled to do some laundry or pick up a kid from school or something like that. So you know how that is. You just got to navigate it, you know?
Right. Gotcha. All right. Your favorite number and why?
Number 9. As a young player, always liked number 9, always thought, you know, it's the goal scorer, it's the, you know, the player on the field that where all the magic happens. You know, I remember us when I was young getting uniforms as a youth player, and I remember just the uniforms getting put up on pegs, and I was like, that's my number. I think I was 9 years old at the time, 9, 10 years old, but I went and stood by number 9. I said, that's my number. So number 9.
Nice. Okay. Are you a emoji or GIF, whatever you want to call it, emoji or GIF guy?
I like the GIFs. I think those are awesome.
Yeah. All right. What's the go-to GIF that you find yourself using a lot, the most?
Well, I'm a Liverpool fan. You know that, Hector, right? So I'm a Liverpool fan. So,
I knew you were a good man the moment I saw you, Coach. I knew you were a good man.
Yep. So a lot of my friends support Manchester United, Man City, and all these other teams. So probably the go-to is, you know, let's say, you know, Liverpool beat a team. There might be a Klopp one in there. There might be a Salah one in there. There might be the Daniel Sturridge little dance. I don't know if you remember that back in the day.
Yeah.
He scores in the corner flag. So that's always a good one.
Right. Are they really friends, though, Coach? Can they be considered friends, especially if they're maybe Man U or Man City? I don't know. Can you call you? Do you admit that in public? You call them friends?
Yeah. They're kind of on my staff, you know, so I got to.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, that's a little different. Yeah, that's a little different. You got to play nice. All right. Something you wish you would have been told prior to entering coaching, something you kind of had to learn on your own.
Oh, that's a good one. Can I come back to that? That's a tough one.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to necessarily be philosophical or, you know, methodology based, but it could be just one of those little things that you realized, hey, this would have been nice to know earlier, right? So, all right, next one. You kind of laid the foundation, the groundwork for this one already. And I already know your favorite, but what is your least favorite soccer team?
My least favorite soccer team? I don't know. I've been a Liverpool fan. You know, you're up there with, I would say Manchester United. My assistant Goffy's going to hate me for saying that, but Manchester United. You know, I like Pep and I like the way they play. I like Tuchel. I think he's forward thinking. I love the way he plays and the system, but Man United are in disarray right now. So it'd have to be Man United.
Gotcha. Okay. Favorite movie quote that you can share? Favorite movie quote?
Oh, man. I don't watch a lot of movies recently, but I just watched Sing with my kids, Sing 2, the other day. That was fun. It's a good one. Watch that.
We went through, we rang in the new year with a full binge of the, on Netflix, the, what is it, the Cobra Kai, most recent season that of the, you know, that Karate Kid spinoff, whatever season it is, I think three or four, I think it is. Yeah. That's what I did on New Year's Day.
I like some of the old, you know, Jason Statham movies with Lock, Stock and Snatch. I don't know if you've seen any of those. Mm-hmm. There's some good one-liners in there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot, of good ones. Yeah. All right. Okay. So this one can probably resonate with you a little bit because of your background, your experience in the past, particularly with the Federation. But you are appointed the soccer czar for this country today. What is the first change you would make in soccer in America tomorrow?
That's a good question. I think if I had that answer, I think I would be the soccer czar. I think there's,
that's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah. I mean, I just think it's different in the US, and I'm not complaining about it because it's given me an incredible, incredible education here in the US, the ability to work with different players, to learn a lot. I think the pay to play system, I think it's sometimes it's a positive. It's definitely positive when you're a club coach. I've been a club coach and, you know, you're on that side of it. But I also can see, like, when you look at abroad and the academies and that part of it, like the pay for play model. So I don't know if that's ever going to happen. I know some clubs have tried to do that, subsidize their ECNL teams, that type of stuff. But I think that there could be more conversation about that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, one that was recently thrown at me that I really absolutely loved that I think has a massive ripple effect more than people realize. And I think it would have a direct impact on pay to play was when I asked this question was solidarity payments, which don't happen in this country at those, you know, at the youth level. So, and, you know, Christian Pulisic is a perfect example at Chelsea. So I think that would kind of change. That would be a game changer, I think, if those actually happened here. So, all right. Who would play you in a movie?
Oh, my God. Where do you get these questions from?
I do my homework, Coach.
Who would play me in a movie? I'm not really good with these.
I thought you were going to go Jason Statham right again. I thought that's where you were going.
Yeah, I think my son could do it.
Yeah. All right. Good. Bucket list destination. Place you want to go, place you want to visit before it's all said and done, before it's a wrap.
My wife keeps talking about Bora Bora or Belize. You know, one of those like beach huts with a glass floor where you can just chill and sit out by the ocean. I think that sounds good.
Okay. All right. Most random thought you've ever had during a match. You're in the middle of a match, whatever, wherever it was, wherever you were, you with the Federation, they're at OU, maybe San Francisco, some random thought not related to the game that you were in coaching just enters your mind.
I have lots of random thoughts. You can imagine. Random thought. It might be about who's on the school run in the morning.
Okay.
Is it my turn for the school run? Am I taking the littles or am I taking the elders?
All right. Good. Name a phobia of yours.
Like heights. Like bridges, really high bridges.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We'll come back to this one. You've had a little bit of time to sit on this one. Something you wish you would have been told prior to entering coaching.
I think that you know, you think it's going to be perfect. And I think just the roller coaster of it, the ups and downs, the twists and the turns, the understanding of the process more, and that you're going to have more tough times than you are good. And that's probably for players as well. We preach that without failure and, without suffering, without hardship, without losses, without, adversity, you if you respond in the right way, if you don't respond in the right way, you don't grow. So it's the exact same for us as coaches.
Right. Okay. That's good. I think it sounds so obvious, but I think when you're first entering coaching, it's the last thing on your mind also.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, it's a good one. Hobby you discovered during the pandemic, maybe something you took on, something you previously hadn't done, hadn't seen, and it's kind of stayed with you a little bit.
I would say a little bit of cooking. I'm like the sous chef at the house, at the car household.
There you go.
So a little bit of that. I would say maybe some basketball with my daughter outside.
All right. Good. And that's the perfect segue to the final question, Coach. I ask this one to everybody. So whenever we return to whatever our normal may be, right, we're out of the pandemic, you got family from England coming over. Everyone's descending on the Carr household there. Team, alumni, your current team, family, everybody. Your Sunday dinner, you're the chef. What are you cooking?
I like to have like a smorgasbord of like steak, chicken, burgers, chips and dip, salsa, queso.
There you go. That's the Texan in you there.
Maybe a salad as well for my wife. Like,
there you go. All right. Awesome. Good stuff. Well, hey, Coach, this has been tremendous. This has been great. We've extremely grateful to have you on. Grateful for your time. Thank you. Obviously, college coaches, college coaches' life, very busy. It's very tight, always on the go. And just as you said, you're going to, you guys are heading out to a showcase tomorrow. And can you mention that, by the way? Where are you headed?
Down to Florida for a showcase down there. So we'll be down in Lakewood Ranch through Monday.
Nice. Okay. So you'll be there. So leave tomorrow, return Monday.
Yep.
Got it. Awesome. All right. Well, again, sincerely appreciate all your time, Coach. Thank you for everything. Any final thoughts, words, anything you want to share?
No, just thank you for I said this to you before, Hector, like, thank you for doing this podcast and, just bringing notoriety to the women's game. I think there's no better time in the US right now to be a female soccer player at any level, whether it's youth, college, professional, national team. I think it's a really special time, and guys like you that get in there and talk about it, I think it's invaluable. So I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And likewise, Coach, we appreciate it. We know again you're busy, and humbled by the fact that we can get someone of your caliber to be able to be here and spend an evening with us. So we're grateful for that. Thank you for everything. For our listeners, again, thank you for your support. Thank you for everything that you're doing. Go to our YouTube page at the 50_50 podcast. Make sure you subscribe there. You can also sign up for notifications. You can also find us on Twitter at 50_50 pod, as well as on Instagram at 50_50 podcast. So we sincerely appreciate all your support, everything you're doing. You're the reason why we do it. And you guys know what to do. Until the next time, keep downloading and keep listening.